Welcome to the Sales Development Podcast, your go-to resource for all things pipeline and revenue production in the tech sales world. Technology marketing, sales development, sales, and revenue operations have combined to create the go-to market engine fueling the success of SaaS startups and established companies alike. Each week, the Sales Development Podcast dives deeply into the strategies, tactics, people, processes, and technology that fuels the revenue machine. The Sales Development Podcast is brought to you by 10bound. Get more free resources, insights, and intelligence today at 10bound.com. And be sure to like and subscribe on YouTube.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sales Development Podcast. I am joined today by a legend in our field, Mr. Keenan, author of everybody's favorite book right here. I've got my Gap Selling. And as you can see, just huge selling book. It's a program. He's the founder and main sales guy of A Sales Guy.
A sales growth company.
A sales growth. Oh, man.
Blew it. That's okay. No worries. We changed the name a couple of years ago. Yes, a couple of years ago. It's more than me now. I have a team and one, I don't agree with the person, but one woman refused to talk to a female salesperson of ours because she says, I'm not doing business with any company named a sales guy. She said I was misogynist. And that female said, well, let me explain to you where the name came from. He had a blog for 10 years and he started the company as an independent consultant and he was the sales guy. That was what he did. And he didn't want to lose the SEO juice. And then as he grew, he hired us all. And it's just the result of that. And the woman said, I don't care. Sometimes I'll fight trends, but other times I have no time to. I wasn't married to it and I didn't need to fight that uphill battle.
Why fight it? And, you know, there's that guy, Will, out in the UK, who's a salesman podcast. Yeah. And sometimes you hear, I don't want a podcast that's by a salesman. You know,
yeah.
You got to roll with the times.
Gone too far, bro. And I'm a liberal and we've gone too far. I'm straight up liberal and we've gone too far.
That's funny because I am too. I mean, I was born and raised here in the Bay Area, dyed in the wool liberal, and it's just gone so far out of control here that we don't have to talk politics, but I definitely feel like I'm being pulled to the other side.
Well, the other side's gone off the rails too. They're not pulling me on the other side, but I'm going to be on the crazy side. I'll be on the crazy left side before I'm on the crazy right side. I stay center left for most things, but the right's gone absolutely. They have no ground to stand on. They've gone off the rails too. So we become so polarized and both sides have gone so crazy. I can't even get my arms around it.
Okay. You're trying. And now, you switch, you know, some of your time. Are you still in Colorado and doing skiing and have that whole thing going?
Yeah. I'm in Colorado right now. I live in Vail. I'm looking out the window. We need snow on the ground, but we need more. We had a huge dump about 2 weeks ago and then it's fizzled out. But yeah, I ski about 60, 70 days a year and follow my kids around. They're all competitive mogul skiers and park skiers. And
that's amazing. Okay. But yet you still run this sales training company.
Yeah.
How do you do it all?
Get good people around. I mean, truth be known, I got a phenomenal team and it's cliche, but it's real. And it's hard to do, but a company will grow only as good as its people allow it to grow. And yes, leadership, it can be weighted. Leadership can play a bigger role than, let's say, one person or two people. But collectively, every time you hire someone, when your small company start growing, that person will have a massive impact on whether or not you achieve your goals or whether the company grows or excels. So I've just been lucky to have really good people. I had some great folks.
That is amazing. You also do a lot of shows. You've got a bunch of different podcasts and different shows that you do. One of them is you bring on people that have studied gap selling and they pitch to you and they run a sales call, potentially trying to sell something to your company. How did you start that? And what was your thought process behind that show?
I don't want to be a buzzkill. I don't remember. I don't remember why I started it or how it started. I mean, I'm not even trying to be a pain in the ass. I don't remember what the motive was. I'm sure it was something along the lines of people wanting to get me to buy stuff. I get called all the time, you know, as a CEO, with people trying to pitch stuff to us. So I'm sure it was a combination of that and realizing, wait, I can capitalize on that. All right, you want to sell to me? Great. But you're going to do it in public and you're going to get my feedback. And if you don't want to do it, then I guess what you're trying to sell wasn't that important. It was probably something around those lines, but I really don't remember exactly what the motivation was. But I do recall that I recognized the value in it right away. I was like, okay, this is huge value. Mm-hmm.
it's like, instead of the theoretical podcasts of talking about ideas and stuff, which are super interesting, this is students of your training actually using...
Hold on. Whoa. Yeah. No. These people are not students of my training. They said they read the book. Some didn't read the book. I want to be clear because I don't need that come back and haunt me. None of these people went through our training. None of these people were coached by us. These people read the book or didn't read the book, but felt they wanted to sell me. So they are real salespeople with real companies who said to themselves, I think I have something you need. So rather than getting 15 minutes of my time behind a closed door, they got 15 minutes of my time in a live setting.
Okay. That's even better because sometimes you call them out. Like they've got the book and stuff like that, but then you refer them to certain parts of it and they're just like, oh yeah, I didn't read that part.
At the end of the day, I don't care if they read it or not, to be honest with you. This was not about promoting gap selling. This was not about trying to prove gap selling worked. It was just the contrary. It was an opportunity for people to see, the rest of the world see how people sell. It was a way for people to look in a sales call and see how people do it and see how bad it really is. And then it gave me a chance to correct these people, steer them a different way, help them look at selling different. And obviously, in my world, if you're going to prepare and you're going to try to sell me, you would think you'd read the book and at least try to understand the concepts. Some didn't, fine, I don't care. I mean, if you were able to sell me without the concepts, fucking good on you. But no, it was just complete strangers who signed up and said, I have a product, and they were hoping to get me into their pipeline. And they're hoping to sell me. Like, didn't know any of these people before they called or came forward.
Oh my gosh. Okay. It's so easy for me to watch this and just like cringe. But at the same time, I really admire these people.
Oh yeah.
For going on and interacting with you. I mean, you're not a shrinking violet. I mean, you're a tough cookie here. They can't just wing it.
No. I am genuinely open to buying something. Like I always say, if you can find a problem that we're currently having here at ASG and you can solve that problem, I will listen. Like I'm all ears. But what I'm not open for is a pitch about your product, particularly if I don't even understand how it's going to help me. As someone who's watched the show, I would say about 75, 80, 90% of the time, they're just trying to tell me why I need something. And I'm like, I don't have any idea why I would ever need to spend a dime on this. But like, oh, because you need it. I'm like, why? It highlights how salespeople enter the sales arena. I shouldn't call it arena because it's really not a sport, but enter a sales environment where they don't have any clue about the buyer and why the buyer's current environment would need their product or service. They have no understanding whatsoever. There's floundering around trying to get me to see what they see. And it only frustrates me as a buyer. And I try to show that's what all your other buyers are seeing. They don't understand how to connect with a buyer and get the buyer into a dialogue that would allow them to realize, oh, I have a problem that you could solve. All right, I'm going to keep talking to you.
And do you think that they don't get that immediate feedback from a buyer? The buyer is probably just sort of in the real world, they're like nodding along going, yeah. I just want to get off this call because
yes,
this guy doesn't. But you actually will challenge them and it's live online so people can learn from it.
As I saw there was multiple value facets to this. The first one is that somebody's trying to sell me, they can get a sales call. They should be able to count that as a sales call within their company because I will buy. I have bought before. I signed a partnership with somebody. It doesn't happen very often. And I would say maybe 20% of the time they did an awful job, but I figured out there might be something there. And so we looked at it. Do you see what I'm saying? So we looked at their product and we took the sales cycle over because they weren't able to do it. But so there was the first value. We saw value to salespeople who wanted to sell us something. The second value was to the audience watching. And I wanted the audience to be able to learn through somebody else. If you as a viewer do this, then you get to learn and watch. And then also from a management perspective, from viewers, you can pretend this is someone you're managing. So you can watch and see how I manage that person. And then finally, it was value to the salesperson. If they were paying attention, they put their ego down for a second. They should have been able to learn a few things and go back. And the next time they start selling to other people, they change the way they sell and improve it. So I just thought it created value in a multitude of ways for everybody involved.
Yes. And do the managers ever come to you and go, holy shit, like...
Never.
Never. Okay.
Never. Not only that, I've never had anybody, a VP saying, man, this sucks. We need some help. Never. It's never been a lead generator for us, ever. You think it might be, but okay. No, never.
Wow.
Not once.
And do the sales reps ever come back to you and go, man, I mean, do they ever like have a breakdown where they just start not crying, but they're like, I can't do this. I mean, from what I've seen, they all go through and they kind of take the medicine very well. I mean, I really admire them for being able to take their medicine in that way.
Yeah, no one's come back after the fact. Well, we've done 50 of them, I think, or 65. I can't remember now.
Oh, okay.
We've done a lot of them. So maybe there was, I can't recall why I started the damn thing. So I'm not going to call, but I may have had one or two people call back or send me a note and saying, hey, I need help with this. You can help me with this, but thanks. But most, like you said, take their medicine and move on.
Okay. Yeah, it was funny. I ran into one guy. I have him up here. Number 54. I don't know what his name is, but I ran into him at a conference and I was like, oh my God, you're the guy from that show. How was that? And he was very receptive to it. He was like, yeah, man, I needed some help, man. And I got it.
Is he doing things different now?
Well, that's a good question. I think there's a couple of things. I want to talk to you about sales training because behavior change is really hard. And these guys come on, you give them all this great advice. You have all your great advice written down on paper, but they fall back into their bad habits after a couple of weeks. There's no way to really answer that, but that's what's hard about sales training, I would think.
I don't think it's hard about sales training. I think it's what organizations fail to comprehend. I don't think sales organizations, when they do the training, are really focused on changed outcomes. So I think it's a bit of irony that sales organizations spend collectively, depending on what type of study you do, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars every year on sales training. Okay. But rarely do I see any sales organization tie that investment to some sort of outcome and then track that outcome over a period of time. It is very rare that I see them do that. Because they do, they basically just want, normally what we hear, and because we're gap sales, we try to force them into that position. But most often what we hear is we just want our people to sell better. We want them to connect with the customer. We want them to do better discoveries. We want them to be able to overcome objections. They just say, well, all this stuff. They're very focused on what we call the skill layer. We want to get us upskilled. We want this. We want that. And like, but why? And you really push them. And they might say, well, you know, we just want to close a few more deals. Well, how many more deals? Over what period of time? Like, what do you think? How will you measure success? Oh, well, they'll be able to do it better. But how are you defining better? Like, literally, you will be blown away of how difficult it is for us from a gap selling perspective to drive our clients to some measurable outcome for the money they're going to invest in upping the skills of the team. Then when it comes to upping the skills of the team, you start asking them, okay, what processes and methods and approaches and things are you going to put in place to ensure that it sticks and ensure that the behaviors change? They're blind. They're like, what do you mean? It doesn't even dawn on them to start changing their internal processes. I don't blame sales training. I blame sales organizations and sales enablement. I just don't think they understand how to do it. Okay. You know how many times I've talked to sales enablement as our potential buyer? We don't do as well selling to sales enablement as we do to the sales VP or CRO or something like that. But do you know how many times I've been with the head of enablement? Sales enablement, I've asked him, what is your win rates? I don't know. Good question. What is your average time? Oh, that's a good question. That's all sales ops stuff. And I'm like, wait, your job is sales enablement. How are you defining and measuring the effectiveness and efficiency of your sales team? And it should only be four measurements: quota attainment, average time to close, win rates, and average sales price. And if those are not increasing from an average sales price perspective, quota perspective, and it's not in win rate perspective, and average time to close isn't decreasing, I would argue, what are you doing? What are you doing, enablement? What is your fucking job? Your job is not to train, but we've lost track of that. And they think their job is to train and create handbooks, but to what end? So that was a really small question, but it's not the sales training. It's the entire fucking foundation and infrastructure that is not connected to the outcomes. And for some reason, nobody thinks that's a problem.
Okay.
Nobody.
Do you see that in the smaller companies that you deal with?
I see it, worse like in the bigger companies.
Yeah, the bigger companies should have that all really locked down.
It's worse in the bigger companies. And I'm not even afraid to say this because I didn't get their business. I don't give a fuck. I got a call from the global, I won't say her name, but the global executive vice president of enablement, worldwide enablement for HP. She couldn't answer a single one of those questions. And then I said to her, I said, okay, let me ask you this then. I said, okay, so then why do you want sales training? Well, it's been a while, so I'm going to pull this from my memory, but I'm not far off. We're seeing a shift from the buyer center, from the technical people to the business people. And currently, our salespeople don't know how to sell to the business folks. So I said, okay, that makes sense to me. I said, that makes sense. She said, so we want to be able to sell to the business people. I said, okay, I can get behind that. I said, but what you've just described is a technical problem, or what we call here at ASG or Gap Selling, a technical problem slash root cause. I said, but have you seen a decline in quota? I don't know. Have you seen it affect your average sales price? I don't know what it is. So I asked her all those questions again. I said, so why do you want to improve this? Well, I just told you. The problem is we've seen a movement. It was getting contentious. I wouldn't back down. So, but she said, because I knew she felt outed in front of all her people. Rather than falling on her sword and looking as an opportunity for growth, she felt outed. So she doubled down. She said, I already told you what the problem is. The problem is our team can't sell to the business side of the house. And I came back and I said, well, that's not a problem to me, because it implies that because they can't do that, quota is decreasing. But if quota is not decreasing, then why do you need to mess with it? Are you anticipating quota would shrink? But you haven't said that either. It implies that because they can't sell to the business side of the house, some set of metrics is going to be under pressure or fall. And from what to what, over what period of time, and what's the impact to your organization? And you can't tell me any of that. So be honest with you, I am not going to take your money, because you're a giant company. This is not going to be $100,000. This is going to be millions of dollars. I'm not going to take your money. I have no idea how you're going to measure success. And the fact that you don't understand is concerning me. Now, it wasn't that direct, and it went over two calls, but it was pretty much that. And then I never heard from her again. And I was right. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So that was the answer to your question. No, they don't know. And I encounter that all the time.
Oh, man. Okay. We've been around for a while. And do you ever get into the discovery portion and you realize you might have more business acumen than the person that you're talking to, even if it's like the CEO of a company? They're asking the wrong questions, and you're just like, you're asking the wrong questions. That must be really frustrating for you.
It's exceedingly frustrating.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I haven't figured out how to crack it. Sometimes I do well. Other times I don't. What I have found in most cases, it is a long, arduous, repetitive cycle where they say they get it, then they go back. They start trying to do things or go through the buying process and talk to other stakeholders. And they come back and ask the same question, but just slightly differently. And I have to explain it all again. And I was like, you're not understanding this. And it is extremely arduous. And yes, it is very frustrating, particularly with Gap Selling, because for all intent purposes, the sales world has not changed very much. Okay. There's been tweaks and bows and different color paints, but for all intent purposes, it's been the same thing. And I liken Gap Selling to other sales books, like a driverless car to all the other cars. Okay. So yes, it has four tires. Yes, it gets you from point A to point B. In most cases, it'll be electric. It doesn't have to be, but in most cases, it'll be electric, right? So what if someone will ask us, what do we do about parking? And I'm like, no, you don't park a driverless car. You don't do that. You send it out and it goes off and it picks up people. Or if you don't want anybody else driving it, then, okay, yes, but you could send it to another place. You don't have to worry about where you park. You can send it off to a storage place somewhere. You don't have to be anywhere with it. Then they might say, what about, you could even go for the step further and say, they start asking about, well, how do we do financing? How do we buy it? It's like, no, you don't buy it, right? There's no reason to buy it because you don't need to keep it. You only need it there when you want it. You see what I'm saying? So my point is they're pushing this idea of how do you manage a driverless car this through the same lens as all the other cars. It's all they've ever known. They have a very difficult time understanding that driverless cars come with a whole different set of things. Like, for instance, another one is the idea of sitting forward. And I say, well, how do I look out the windshield, et cetera, because you have no seats looking out? It's like, you don't need to. The whole point is to create a living room experience inside the car so people are interacting. You can get work done. You don't need a windshield. You don't need to look out unless you just want to look for the view. But they have a hard time, the same thing, thinking in those terms. Am I making any sense?
Yeah. And they keep asking you, well, how do I park it? And you're just like, dude.
You don't.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't. You don't. What about this? And what about that? And some of the questions are good, but a lot of them are, no, it's irrelevant. You're not understanding.
Got it. And with the sales enablement topic, does it seem like you're coming into it saying, okay, I'm looking at things from a business perspective. You're an entrepreneur. You've run a business for several years. So you know the dollars and cents coming in and out. But they're looking at it from this kind of very cushy corporate job where they need to check a box on, and I'm not trying to diss sales enablement people, but they need to check a box that says we're getting Keenan's going to come and do our SKO and da 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 da. And then they get to keep their job, you know, and everybody's happy. There's sort of a clash there.
Who's the clash with?
Well, between you, you're coming into it going, hey, if I'm going to put a dollar into sales training, I want $2 back because I manage the P&L of my own company. And I understand how important yes. that is. Even this person that's the global VP of all sales enablement, they're kind of looking at things from a different perspective. They're not as close to cash coming in and out of their business. So they're just like, hey, we need some sales training. Let's talk to Keenan and whatever, MRI and this other one and see who's most appropriate for us.
Yep. I think too many, obviously not all. Someone is probably listening to this yelling and screaming at the screen or the radio, whatever the frick it is.
We have a
comment.
Their iPhone.
Yeah, they're just pounding away. For the most part, my experience has been the majority of enablement teams are very checkbox oriented. It's we need a playbook. We need someone to SKO. We need training. We need collateral. We need materials. Like we need. And they check. There is no connection to the outcomes. Look, the world, sales enablement in itself, it says I'm enabling the sales team. You need a very clear definition of what that means. And you're right. I like how you put it. From my world, and the reason, half the reason I wrote Gap Selling the way I wrote it is, I don't do anything that's not going to show some type of return. Now, it doesn't always have to be financial return, but it's got to be return. And so enablement's like, well, I got the playbook. Okay, great. Did that playbook result in any type of improvement in any of the sales metrics that you think matter? And at this point in time, I'm not even going to argue with the metrics. If you pick a metric and it's wrong, that's on you. I don't give a fuck. But if you're moving it, you're moving it, right? But I know what I think they should be, but you should know what they are and say, okay, we launched this playbook. And since we've launched this playbook, we've seen a 2% increase in quota, average sales price, decrease in churn. I don't give a shit, but tell me, what was this for? And I do not see that connection. I just do not see that connection. And it makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. I think more time and effort needs to be put into what numbers are we trying to, what are we trying to enable? And what's the output of that enablement that we're trying or hoping to achieve? And that should be your job's enablement. Because yeah, you'd be the best enabled person in the world if you could show that everywhere you went, you moved the key metrics by enabling the sales team.
100%. And kudos to all the sales enablement people, you know, but this is your chance to get better. And you have the best coach out here right now talking to you. One thing, Keenan, that I see on the live show is the reps get lost in the discovery portion. I even see this in myself because I kind of have an idea about where I'm going with the sales call, but they just start going down this route and you sort of get frustrated because they're asking all these questions. You're just like, dude, where is this going?
What's the question?
There you go. I'm going down a rabbit hole. Do you see a pattern on the calls where people that you're talking to are asking you all these discovery questions and you get lost as the buyer because it's like this endless number of questions that's not really going anywhere?
100%. Look, what happens is in most sales calls is sales organizations are primarily what I call product centric. You want to do a test? I'll test. If people are honest, my biggest issue is not enough self-awareness and honesty inside of the sales world. And I think a lot of that is a lot of the sales world is a lot of alphas and strong personalities. And there's nothing wrong with it. I'm one of them, right? But one of the things I really try to do is I try to be very self-aware. And I drive my team crazy, but to be like, Keenan will be the first one to tell you he's wrong. He'd be the first one to say he's sorry. Like, yes, I'm a pain in the ass and I have strong convictions, but I'm always trying to learn. Like, I'm going through a learning process right now on something that's really cool. But anyways, it doesn't matter. So I don't see enough of that piece right there, right? What most organizations, if they're honest with themselves, are product-centric. If you look at how their organization is set up and you look at how they onboard new salespeople, et cetera, 90% of the time it may be set on sales skills and then product. Product. There is not enough attention or time given to the business side of the people you sell to. there isn't enough education and training and reinforcement around the business acumen and around the business metrics that your product or service impacts for your buyers and customers of what they are. So what are the problems? If those problems exist, what are the impacts? And then what are the root causes of the problems? In other words, what's causing the problems to exist in the first place? And really helping people to understand that whole thing so that when they go in and start having a conversation with a buyer, they're trying to understand that buyer's current state and diagnose what is happening. But when all I do is teach about the product, it's exceedingly difficult. If I answer a couple of questions in a way that doesn't resonate with your product or whatever, you're stuck. Because the whole time you're trying to ask me questions just to get me to say something, I say, my product fixes that, right? But three or four questions in and you're done. And that's what happens. They don't know where to go. They're lost. They're not truly diagnosing. They're searching for a yes. They're not searching for understanding. They're not searching for comprehension. They're not asking questions for awareness. They're asking questions to lead. They're asking questions to get a yes. They're asking questions to be able to find a way to get you to say something. That's why it doesn't take long that after three or four answers that you didn't expect to get, you're literally lost. You're lost. And like when you're lost in a forest, you just go left and then right and back the way you came from. And you sit down for a second and you're all over the place because you have no direction.
Right. And on the show, like you'll start to talk about some of your business problems. And then you can see they try to ask you like a leading question that like reels you back into talking about whatever they're selling.
Yep.
And you're just like, dude, did you just listen to anything that I just said?
They don't listen. No. They're not listening. They're hearing you and hoping that they hear you say something that resonates with them. There was one that sticks out that I'll never forget. The guy never found a problem I had, but he kept telling me I need it. He's like, dude, I said, what problem do I have? And he said, you don't have whatever he was selling. And that's why you need it. Like that was his whole thing. Like in his head, he's like, because it's sort of like, you don't have a car. So you need a car.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do I need a car? Because you don't have one. You can't get anywhere. You can't do like, and I'm like, but I can get somewhere. Well, you can't get there fast. And I'm like, well, how fast do I need to get there? Like in his head, he was on lockdown that it wasn't a car, obviously. I can't remember what it was. But in his head, the way he was selling was because you don't have what I have, you don't have this car, then that's your problem. And when I kept trying to coach him and say, dude, why do I need a car? I live in New York fucking City. I get it's all metaphorical, but I live in New York City. I'm 27. I work six blocks down the street. I got the metro. Like, why do I need a car? I got no place to park in my building. I don't make enough money to pay. Why the fuck do I need a car? Well, because you don't have one. What if you want to go to Long Island? What if you want to do this? Well, what if I can rent a car? He wouldn't hear it is my point. He was just so dead set on trying to drive his product home. He took no time to understand and really listen and say, all right, that's a good point. If you live in New York and you won't go out to Montauk, but once or twice in the summer, you could rent a car and you'd have to pay for parking. Yeah, I guess you're right. You don't need one. Thanks.
Yeah. Do you think that it's because they have a quota to fill and they're under all this pressure and stuff and they've only received training on their product and they're just like, I finally got Keenan on a call to talk about this and I have to sell something right now.
Yes.
And it's like, if you start doing good discovery and you realize you don't need a car, then do they feel like they've been defeated? Because now it's like, well, I just spent a bunch of time with somebody who's not going to buy anything.
Yep, 100%. But they're better off to know that and move on. That's time they could spend to make more calls. That's time they could do a little more research and find another customer. That's free time.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste your time with someone you're never going to sell to.
Okay. This is so interesting. And if somebody's getting into sales now and they watch some of these calls and they realize like, man, I'm falling into this same trap, what would you recommend they do to start to get out of this and master the craft of selling?
That's a big answer, but I start with all the times. People build a pick, a problem identification chart. It's in my book. You can go to my website. You can download a little 3-pager that tells you what it is and how to do it. If you go to resources, I think it's under problem identification chart. Go there and build a pick. And then from there, start asking yourself, what questions am I asking? Am I asking questions to understand why they need my product or service before I sell it? Or am I trying to figure out how I can sell them? Two very different approaches. Am I asking questions to try to figure out how do I sell them? Or am I asking questions to genuinely understand, do they even need my product in the first place? Almost like trying to disqualify them.
almost trying to ask enough questions to get yourself to a place where they don't need this, so I can walk away. And that's really how it should be focused. And that's what I do. I don't even think about what I'm selling. I'm trying to figure out, why do you need this? What happens if you don't have it? Why do you need to change? Who cares if you don't change? And if I can't answer that question for myself first, I don't sell anything.
Mm-hmm. That's the gap. And do they fill out the problem identification chart before the call or?
Yeah. You have. Before. Because here's the deal. People don't understand. Your product or service only solves 3 or 4 problems, maybe 5 at the most.
Yeah.
I've yet to run into a product or company. Now, a holding company is different. I'm a holding company like Unilever. Yeah, I'm going to need 1 million picks because I sell dishwashing soap and I sell deodorant. Okay, they solve different problems. So I can't do one for Unilever. For each of their product sets, do you see what I'm saying? I could do one. So most companies don't have a bazillion different products. Most companies have 1 or 2 products, major products, that drive the majority of the sales. And even if they are different, they still affect the same thing. So you sit down and ask, what do I sell? And then you figure out, what problems do I solve? Then if those problems exist, what's the impact to an organization if those products exist? And then you ask yourself, what caused them? And I like to do this one because it's not B2B, it's B2C. No, it's like, yeah, it's kind of, but everybody can get it. But if I'm a therapist, I have to sell. Now, granted, most people call inbound, but it doesn't really matter. If I'm a therapist, that's my job. And I'm selling my therapy services, right? So if I did a pick as a therapist, what do you think one business problem or problem I solve is?
Mm-hmm. Mental health.
No. Notice what I said. I'm a marriage therapist.
Oh, sorry. Arguments.
That's a root cause. That's not a business problem.
Oh, alimony.
I don't solve that. The courts handle that.
Okay. Argument leads to divorce, which leads to alimony.
Okay. So I can help you. You could say we're at risk of getting a divorce.
Okay.
That's a business problem. That marriage is very close to divorce or at risk of getting a divorce. That's a business problem. That's one I solve. Okay. Another one could be abuse, right?
Okay.
Another business problem is there's abuse in the relationship. I solve that. But either way, those are business problems. Let's just stick with the easiest one. We're close to divorce. The relationship is about to fail. That's a business problem. What's the impact of that? Give me 2 impacts of, if that problem exists, what's an impact if it's not resolved?
Emotional devastation and financial hardship.
Okay. Give me some more that a little more relationship oriented.
Loneliness, heartbreak.
Lose my kids full time. See what you're doing. Even you're struggling to get in the seat of that person. Think about this. Even you, as you go through this, you had a hard time putting yourself in the shoes of that person. 9 out of 10 times, you got kids in the picture, right? So I like the loneliness one. That was a good one. But then I'm not getting my kids full time. Loneliness, I may have to deal with financial hardship, the loss of 25 years of a partnership or 15 years of partnership. So those are the impacts, right?
Yeah.
Now, what are the root causes? Mm-hmm. Give me some root causes of why the marriage almost fails.
Self-centered.
Good. That's what, yep.
I'm trying to think of all of my faults.
That's good. I like doing that.
Lack of attention.
Yep.
Distraction. Substance abuse.
Yep. Lack of communication. Inability to resolve problems. Lack of intimacy. Cruelty. Not spending quality time together. All that stuff. All of that stuff. I can write all of that down as my pick. As a therapist, these are the problems I solve, right? Mm-hmm. This is the impact of those problems exist. These are the root causes of those problems. Now, if I memorize all that, or this becomes innate to me, and I get on the phone, how much easier is that call now?
Because you're looking for the clues from the direct discovery. You're looking for the clues to find those.
Yes. And that my pick is like my compass. It's my guide. It's like the medical book for a doctor. If he says, someone says they got stomach pain, the doctor doesn't say, oh, I take an antacid. That's like, buy an antacid. No. Whoa. Okay. Where in the stomach? Describe the pain. How long you've been having it? Does it happen before or after you eat? Because what he's doing is he's looking for root causes, or he might be looking for impact. When you get the pain, does it cause you to go to the bathroom? Does it cause you to have gas? Does it prevent you from sleeping? Right. So now he's looking for the impacts. By doing this, as you answer the question, it allows them to zero in on what he or she thinks the problem is. Then they say, oh, stomach cancer, antacid, GERD. Like, they're like, oh, I know what this is. Let's try this.
Yeah.
But they don't think about that until they've honed in, but they know what to look for. Salespeople go into selling have no fucking clue what they're looking for. They have no clue what the symptoms are of the problem or the ailment. They have no clue on how that ailment's impacting the organization. They have no clue what to ask. They have no clue of the connective tissue. So that's why they fail. They literally fail. That's why. So you can do that up front, teach that, and now you know what you're looking for. It should be automatic. The person says, oh yeah, my husband and I, we're about to get divorced. Mm-hmm. Tell me more. Well, we're just not getting along. Is it because you're not communicating well? Like, walk me through that. Tell me about your communication. Tell me about your level of intimacy. Tell me about how much time, quality time you spend together. How do you guys communicate when you're struggling? Do you call each other names? Has the idea ever hit you? Have you ever hit him? Do you sleep in separate beds? How do you resolve issues? You see what I'm doing? I'm not even a therapist. And I know exactly what questions to ask. And if I get the answers to all of these questions, yes, no, kind of, explain, within 20, 30 minutes, I know exactly what the fuck's going on. Mm-hmm. And now I can start saying whether or not I could help you and what I think it is and what's happening. That's what salespeople should be doing, and they can't do it.
Okay. All right. So everybody listening to this, the first thing, obviously, get gap selling and download the problem identification chart, fill that out. That was a good example with the therapy because, you know, brings it home to real problems and implications that you might have. And then, Keenan, you not only do live gap training, but you have online modules that they can join. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, the live is just, I don't know, call it a podcast, I guess, right? But the online training, yeah, we have an online training. It's pretty cool. And it's basically the same training we do live for organizations, but it's just go at your own journey. It's really cool because based on your answers, it takes you in different directions. It's just not watching somebody talk at you and then you hit next. And now it actually engages with, asks questions. It has pop-ups as you answer those. You get different engagement. So it kind of has a decision tree type of thing built into it. It's one of the few that I think it's the only sales one in the world that does that.
Yeah. And this isn't a knock on salespeople at all. I mean, like I said, I admire those people that came on the show and was able to take the knocks and learn from it and keep going. I think a lot of people fall into sales as a profession, you know, and they get the job and there's no training, there's no sales training. They get a couple of days of product training and then they're off to the races. They're trying their best to like figure this out, but it's not like they have to go through like a residency to become a doctor and then they get out when they're 35 and they're able to practice sales. I admire everybody that went on the show. You've got more guts than I. I think that you should do a show where you critique the podcast host like this.
Because there you go.
I need some help. But yeah, salespeople, watch this, learn from Keenan, and then take his online and live training so that you can improve. That's my advice.
Thank you.
Keenan, thanks for coming on the show and keep it up. I can't wait to see the upcoming episodes.
Thanks, bro. Will do.
Thank you for listening to the Sales Development Podcast, the only audio forum 100% focused and dedicated to sales development. Please be sure to subscribe to the show on YouTube and take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes. Your support makes our show possible. If you are struggling with your sales development program, contact us at 10bound.com for a no-obligation exploratory call. Again, that's 10bound.com.